This is Children Come First and Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here today with Representative Phyllis Munday, who's a member of the House of Representatives in the state of Pennsylvania and whose office is in Kingston, Pennsylvania. Representative Munday is on many committees, and I'll let her speak to you about some of them. Basically, I know that she's on the Education Committee and is very, very much concerned with children and their welfare in this state. Good morning, Representative Munday.
Good morning, Daria.
Could you give us a little bit about your personal background and how you've come to running for a representative?
I began in politics, actually came from the League of Women Voters, which gave me a good background in issues work. The politics was a little harder coming. But in 1990, I was elected for the first time and have been serving the 120th Legislative District for the last almost 10 years now. My background, actually, before I was elected, I was in manufacturing. And I ran a small manufacturing company, about 60 employees. And I did the purchasing and the accounting and dealt with the lawyers and the personnel work. For the 10 years before I got elected.
You are very interested in children. I know that you are on the committee, the Education Committee, and there is a program that you are working on called the Ounce of Prevention. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
House Bill 2300 was just introduced within the last several months. It was a bipartisan effort in the House and Senate. Charlie Dent in the Senate and Mike Opaque in the Senate and Pat Brown and I in the House introduced identical pieces of legislation having to do with home visiting programs for new mothers up to age 5. It would be intense home visitation for parents to help with parenting skills, to identify problems that a child might be having as early as possible. It's primarily for at-risk families who would be screened through a process and invited on a voluntary basis to join the home visiting program. And the bill would provide grants at the state level for such programs. And there are many such programs that exist already in Pennsylvania. Early Head Start has just begun programs funded through the federal government that do home visiting. Healthy Families America and Healthy Families Pennsylvania, the focus is on preventing child abuse. And the family centers also provide some home visiting programs in various parts of the state. As I said, there are numerous home visiting programs that are already in existence. This would supply grant funding on a more predictable basis for those programs and hopefully would expand the network of programs that exist across the state. I've long believed that that age group, 0 to 3, as I know you know, I've heard you talk about this before, early childhood brain development is so crucial to the future of that individual. And if you want a child to develop his full potential, you really should not ignore those early years. So many of our families who live in poverty, who are at risk because of the background of the parents, perhaps they didn't have good parenting themselves, this would really be helpful to them with their parenting skills. The child would be immunized on a regular basis. Brain stimulation in those very early years would result, hopefully, in a better IQ. There's just so much that we could do for children in those early years, except that we largely ignore that period of a child's education. We don't really deal with them until they get to kindergarten. And in some cases, that's at age 6.
The wonderful part about this is that you are preparing parents in their homes rather than creating daycare. And we know from the horror stories in daycare around the country that daycare is not necessarily the answer. And I think the laudable part about this program is the fact that you are going into encouraging mothers who are home with their children to learn more about taking care of their children rather than taking them out of the home and giving them someone else who might be paid minimum wage to take care of their children. So I think this is an incredibly laudable act on your part. What types of skills, I know you talked about the programs that deal with child abuse and things of that. What specific kinds of skills will parents be learning with this program?
Well, how to interact with your child. Some parents are not aware that you must look your child in the eye and speak to that child in infancy from the day that child's born. How to bond with your child. I mean, some things that people who are perhaps better educated or who had good parenting themselves take for granted in terms of parenting their own children. Some families are absolutely clueless about infancy and brain development and child development. And I think we all recognize, I'm a parent, my son is 29 years old now, and I felt clueless as a new parent, and I had a college education. And I had a mother who was a stay-at-home, excellent mother, but I never thought to ask her some questions. And I remember my husband and I feeling very at a loss many times about what you do when your child is crying or you can't figure out why your child is crying. And some of the stories I've heard from caseworkers who actually go into the homes and do home visiting, I think we take a lot for granted, people who feel better prepared to be parents. We take for granted some of the things that we know and have learned from our own parents and have learned through interaction with others that many at-risk families just don't know, and their children suffer for it. So I think specifically we're looking at bonding with the child, how to express love and affection for a child, how to increase self-esteem in your child. There's a way to discipline children that does not destroy their self-esteem. Again, you know, I think every parent, frankly, could benefit from this kind of home visitation. Unfortunately, the money available to do such programs in the beginning were targeting at-risk families. I would like to see this become a universal program. And I think for many individuals, it could be the difference between a child reaching his or her full potential and not. So, and as your child develops and grows older and begins to, you know, you've heard the phrase, the terrible twos, that's the period during which parents must begin to learn how to control behavior that is unacceptable. I was talking to my own son last night on the telephone, and he was telling me how my grandson, Mason, was exhibiting some unacceptable behavior. And I was asking Brian what he did to correct him. And fortunately, my own son, whose mother, my own son, whose wife is a nurse, and was a nurse in the maternity ward, which, oh, I just love that. But she's very good at doing research about child behavior and child development. So she has been able to help my own son with parenting. And I think that's absolutely fabulous. But a lot of parents don't have that background. Most parents don't. So whatever we can do to help parents with behavior problems their child might have, or just basic child development problems. At times, a child will develop some very early symptoms of problems that may develop later. If we can find out what they are and try to correct them early, they prevent much of what we have to try to correct in school when it may be too late.
Well, I think this is fantastic. I hope that you're going to do some kind of longitudinal studies with regard to this to keep track of these children to prove. You know, as you were speaking, it sort of made me feel sad that there are industrialized world where we've had the mothers go out and work, and now we don't have examples of parenting and mothering because our mothers, there wasn't anyone in the home to be able to teach us that, and now we've got to learn it all over again. Probably something that should have been instinctual is now something that we have to learn. But would you tell us how we could find out, parents who are listening today, how they can find out about this program and where they can go to either sign up or get to a social worker or wherever?
Well, unfortunately, in our local area in Luzerne County, there is the Family Enhancement Center. It's primarily through Wyoming Valley Healthcare Systems, and they're screened through their Mothers-to-Be program. So I can't say that you can call the Family Enhancement Center and just get signed up for the program, unfortunately, although that's certainly, I would advise you to do that if you think you need that kind of assistance, and they may be able to refer you to another agency, or maybe they could do an intake on you and see if you would be qualified for their program. But I think that's my point. House Bill 2300 is still in the early stages. It was introduced some months ago, but it has not seen any legislative action yet. I did offer it as an amendment to the state budget, but it did not stay in the state budget. And again, I just feel that it's so penny-wise and pound-foolish to try to deal with problems that children develop. You know, we try to deal with these problems through the juvenile justice system, through the special education system. Very expensive interdiction when parents and children have already failed. Let's begin to address the problems before they reach the stage where they need that kind of expensive involvement. The children and youth system is another system that we rely on heavily when parents and children fail. That's too bad that we have to get to that place before we can help parents with their children. And again, children reach kindergarten often. They're so far behind intellectually, have not been stimulated in the right ways to develop their intellectual capacity. We need to begin to address that in the very early ages. Again, birth to age 3, birth to age 5, before they become problems for our school systems and our juvenile justice systems.
Now, is this bill only for Luzerne County, or is it for the whole state? Because we have Lackawanna County listening and many other places in the state that listen to this program. So,
the House Bill 2300 would provide grant funding for any existing home visitation program who wanted to apply for the grants. And hopefully some organizations who don't currently offer home visiting would apply for grants and set up their own home visiting programs. So, but again, the programs that are already in existence currently rely on sporadic types of foundation funding. Wyoming Valley Healthcare Systems funded part of their program for a while, and now I think those funds will be withdrawn as Wyoming Valley Healthcare Systems falls into some financial decline. But again, if you're interested in House Bill 2300, I would suggest that you write or call the House and Senate leadership and ask that they schedule those bills for a vote, because that's what it would take to get this grant funding to be statewide, available statewide to existing or potential home visitation programs.
You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and we're here every week at this time. This week we're here with Representative Phyllis Munday, who's the House of Representatives in the state, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And we are talking about children, as we always do. And I must say, Representative Munday, you certainly are, the prevention mode is certainly much more effective. And if everyone thought like you, we'd certainly have a lot less spending with regard to the problems that we have in today's world. Now, you are also on the Education Committee, and I'm assuming this is not the part of the Education Committee because this is children from birth to 3. So, what kinds of things are, now we are looking at many, many things in education, and I can't say that we're all proud of being 47th in the nation in education. What kinds of issues are you looking at in terms of assisting? I know there's a dichotomy here. We all want local school districts to participate in the education of their local schools. And yet, when we give that responsibility to the local schools, there's a lot of politics that goes on, and the things that we
anticipate might happen don't necessarily happen because those kinds of things happen. What is your personal view on education for the state and how we can make it better?
Well, that's a debate that we have just about every education committee meeting. And I have to say that I'm very proud of the members of the House Education Committee because even though many of us have very diverse views, philosophically, ideologically, I think each and every one of us truly believes in public education, that it is universal education that made our country great and that we want to make it better. We want to continue to improve conditions of teaching and learning in the classroom. And frankly, that's where I would devote more resources and more attention. So much of what we do is on the periphery. We just did a bill, for example, which I supported and voted for, to require school districts to put report cards on the internet with regard to all kinds. There's a whole laundry list of information that they would now have to provide to parents and taxpayers via the internet. Information such as class size, how many teachers per student, how many advanced placement courses they offer. There's a whole list of things that they would have to provide information. And while that's all well and good, and I certainly believe that school districts should be accountable to the public, accountable to parents and taxpayers, that is not improving conditions of teaching and learning in the classroom. In fact, some believe that it's taking away from that because now administrative time and effort will be devoted to this report card instead of devoted to improving basic education in the classroom. And I think a couple of things. I think, first of all, I think that parents are a huge, huge part of the problem and the solution to basic education, public education. And as we just discussed, we ignore the continuum of learning from 0 to 5 or 0 to 6 until a child gets to school, and then we expect that child to pick up the ball and run with it headlong into being an academic achiever. And so I would really hope that we could begin to look at that age group, 0 to 5, as part of the continuum of education and stop ignoring it. Use it for all it's worth to develop the academic potential of each child long before they get to school. My bill was introduced with the oversight of the Department of Health, but I would love to have had it be with the oversight of the Department of Education. The Department of Education would never agree to it, I'm sure. But again, you know, if kids were able to come to school ready to learn, healthy, well-fed, good parenting, involved parents, think what our education system could be. And I have to challenge one of the statements you just made, though. You said we were 47th in the nation in terms of education. And quite frankly, I have never seen any kind of a study. I know people like to compare SAT scores state to state. That, to me, is not a valid comparison, SAT scores state to state. Not all states rely on SAT scores for their students to go to college. Pennsylvania students take the SAT in far greater numbers than many other states in the nation. Which mean that we have a larger percentage of lower scoring children than other states. So I've never really seen a valid comparison, a scientific comparison state to state, that indicates that we are 47th in the nation. Now, having said that, I certainly don't disagree that we can do better. We can do better, we must do better, and we must focus on academic achievement. Having excellent teachers in our classroom is part of that puzzle. Having involved, committed parents who are committed to supporting the education of their students and working with teachers in the classroom if necessary to improve student performance. Having school boards and administrators who are dedicated and committed to conditions of teaching and learning in the classroom, having the very best teacher they can find, making sure that that teacher continues to be a high-performing teacher, evaluating and counseling teachers who are not performing up to the level that they should be, removing teachers who have failed to improve enough to meet the standards that we would expect. It's provided for in state law, and yet there doesn't seem to be the political will to do it in some cases. And then people come back to me and say, well, just do away with tenure. Well, tenure isn't the problem. Tenure is just due process. Just says you have to have a reason and you have to document it to remove a teacher from the classroom. And I would hope, given the political system of hiring in our state, that that would continue to be in place, that you couldn't just willy-nilly hire and fire people you liked or didn't like or perhaps didn't support you in the last election. I would hope that we would not go to a system where that would be the norm. So tenure is not the problem. Administration, if you believe that there are bad teachers in your classrooms, administrators need to correct that problem. It's doable. We just need to have the political will to do it. So I guess those are just some of the things that we work on. Funding for education is a huge issue constantly. How do you make sure that schools have appropriate structures to teach kids? How do you make sure that they have adequate books, up-to-date textbooks, computers, which we all know is the wave of the future? If you don't have computer skills in this 21st century, you can pack it in as far as getting a really good job. Libraries, aides in the classroom to help with students who need additional help and are falling a little behind. These are all things that we really need to address, and we try to address, but often we're not perfect human beings, and we have very diverse opinions, and it's a very diverse state. We have urban areas like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh who have some unique problems in terms of education. We have some extremely rural areas which actually have similar problems because funding base for education in those districts is difficult. And then you have suburban areas. So the diversity of our state is problematic when it comes to education. And frankly, I think the diversity issue is why we focus so largely on local control. And I have to tell you that I am not the fan of local control that some are, because I've just seen so often that weak leadership at the local level leads to very poor public education. So I do think that it's our responsibility, it's certainly our constitutional responsibility to provide a thorough and efficient system of public education, which seems pretty all-encompassing to me. And we should be laying down some basic parameters through which local school boards should be acting. But this notion that every decision should be only made at the local level, I have never agreed with. And I think it's unfortunate then if you happen to be born into a school district where the local leadership is ineffective and perhaps more concerned about taxes than about education, that you suffer. And I'm not sure that should be the case.
Wow, I have so many questions to ask after that. First of all, I want to get back to one of the issues you said about local administrators taking on the responsibility of weeding out those teachers who were ineffective. Now, I know one personally, a superintendent, who has attempted to do that within the first year of his reign, began to get rid of teachers who were not effective, inefficient in the classroom, and happened to be firing some people who were friends of the school board, and is now on his way out the door became, was hired to do a job, is doing the job, but because he was firing people who were friends of the school board, is looking at not having a job. What can you say about that?
That's local control. That's what I said when I meant that you needed the political will to do what you need to do. It is not a function of state law that makes it impossible to remove good teachers, or poor teachers, excuse me. It's doable, but you need the support of the administration, and often it's not the superintendent who's trying to do it, it's the principal, who either doesn't have the support of the superintendent or doesn't have the support of the school board. And frankly, I blame that somewhat on voters in the school district, that they put school board members who will not support an administrator who's trying to do the best for their kids. But having said that, I mean, I have school districts where I've had many conversations with superintendents who found very many creative ways to not publicly, because, I mean, the goal is not to publicly embarrass a teacher, but in very creative ways have found opportunities to counsel teachers who are not performing up to par out of the profession. And so I know it can be done. And I've attended many public hearings with the Education Committee where administrators have told me in no uncertain terms that the law does not prevent them from removing bad teachers. You simply need to do what's required by law. But you cannot do it without the support of the total administration and the school board. So you're absolutely right about that.
You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We are here today with Representative Phyllis Munday from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania House of Representatives, whose offices are located in both Kingston and in Harrisburg. And you can reach her at any time in her Kingston office at, 717-283-9622. That's 717-283-9622. You can reach us here at Children Come First. Our toll-free number is 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PROKIDS. Or you can reach us by email at prokids, PROKIDS, at rlc.net. That's PROKIDS at rlc.net. You can find us on our website, our old website at www.rlc.net/prokids. I'm sorry, that's our old, our new website is under construction, so I'm giving you the old one again, which I've forgotten, www.rlc.net/prokids. Do you have a website that you'd like to tell people about, or email, or anything like that, since we're in this technology age? Perhaps you have a different phone number or email address you'd like to give people.
I don't have an email address that I give out to the general public. My own constituents can email me at pmundy@pahouse.net. And I can be reached in my district office or in my Harrisburg office, and that number is 717-783-1614.
You can join us for our second half hour, and we'll be again speaking with Representative Munday. If you'd like to call us, the number's 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PRO-KIDS. You can reach Representative Munday, 717-783-1614, or 717-283-9622. And please join us for our second half hour.
Policies and being effective in doing their jobs. And we actually had this discussion many times over the 10 years I've been on the Education Committee about what is the role of the school board, what is the role of the administrator, the principal, and the teacher. And one of my big complaints has been from the very beginning that teachers are the ones on the front lines with the children in the classroom, and yet their voices are often the most ignored. Their concerns, their insight into what schools need and what administrators should be asking for, what policies should be adopted. I think the administration and the school boards don't ask often enough what the teachers think and what they think is the best thing for the children. And that's one thing that I've tried to do in all my years in office, because I graduated in 1970 from Bloomsburg State College with a degree in education, secondary education, but I never really taught for any long period of time. I taught for 1 year full-time, and then after that I really only did substitute teaching. I got married, I had my son, and went into other areas and never really returned to teaching, although I loved it, but couldn't get a job in my major. So having that experience behind me, I know how challenging a classroom can be. And I also believe that over the years, teachers develop an experience and a knowledge, and their experience is worth listening to. It's worth being taken into consideration when you're trying to solve problems and when you want to take new approaches. And what I hear from my teachers all the time is, you know, you're constantly changing things in Harrisburg, and our school board is constantly changing things without asking us what we think. And just as we're beginning to do what you've told us to do, you change it again. And it becomes very frustrating, I think, at the local level in the classroom to accommodate what we think, what we in all our wisdom think is the best thing for kids. And I really think that those school boards and those superintendents who meet with their teachers regularly and truly listen to what they're saying about what's happening in the classroom and what their needs are, what the needs of the students are. They're the most successful districts, where you have leadership that's collaborative, leadership that's inclusive, leadership that is truly interested in making sure that everyone works together as a team. Those are the most successful school districts, in my view.
I absolutely agree with you, and it's very well known and documented in research that the major players, when they become involved in this decision-making projects, who are the teachers, it is more likely to be a successful program because they buy into it rather than having it come from on high and be imposed. And so you're much more likelier to have a successful program if teachers are a part of the process than you are if they're not. I want to go back a little bit to something I heard today, which was Peter Garland talked about how research shows from the Carnegie unit, I believe, or somewhere, Carnegie people, that throughout the state of Pennsylvania, the best teachers go on to other places, and school districts tend to hire the middle or the lower end of the spectrum of teachers. What does that mean?
Well, I think what he was saying was that there was a study done that indicated that school boards in their hiring practices are selecting from the middle and the lower end of the scale in terms of how successful the teachers were in college academically. So in other words, if they had a 4.0, they might be less likely to be hired than if they had a 3.0 or a 2.5. And I think that may be a little misleading, because I think what I think it may be happening in some school districts is that school districts don't only look at your grade point average, they also look at your teaching skills and whether you're able to motivate students or not. And certainly that is a very important part of the teaching profession, and not to be overlooked and not to be underestimated. So I think that was a little misleading. We were talking about regulations this morning with regard to teacher preparation, And we were talking about a grade point average of a 3.0 in the second semester of your sophomore year of college to even be allowed to enter the teaching curriculum at a college or university in Pennsylvania. And actually, those regulations were disapproved because we said that a 3.0 is relatively meaningless in your second semester of a sophomore year. You haven't even really begun to take the advanced courses in your major. And it also ignores the fact that that's only part of the equation, is your grade point average. You can have an extremely high IQ, an extremely high grade point average, and be a terrible teacher. And I've had a couple of those, mostly in college, but I've had a couple of those who were extremely brilliant but couldn't teach a lick. And so in terms of hiring teachers at the high end of the grade point average, I think he was saying that they were that they tend to hire from the middle or the lower end. And while that, again, is partly because we're not only looking at grade point averages, we're looking at teaching skills. But another part of that, and that another issue that was discussed this morning, is the issue of local control and hiring practices at the local level that ignore the ability of the applicants in favor of who you know. And I think that most all of us on the Education Committee, because we are committed to the achievement of students, we want the absolute best teachers we can find in the classroom. And for better or worse, we're relying on local school boards to hire the absolute best teachers they can find. And I think a lot of us are not convinced that they do that.
Well, I personally would like to just take a little bit of a stand here and talk about the teacher training that goes on throughout the state. We've talked before on this program about how things vary from university to colleges with regard to teacher training, with regard to the grades that a student receives. A 3.0 at the University of Penn is very different than it is at Cheney. And it's very difficult. You can't compare one university with the next or one teacher training program with the next. But I must say that in my experience traveling around the state, I was really amazed at how much teachers were not informed of the latest research in learning. Now, I just recently did a program for teachers and introduced information that was 50 years old and they had never heard of it, much less information that was only 25 years old. So it seems to me that one of the greatest problems here, and which leads us to believe that many of the students are more intelligent than they have much more access to information through computers than their teachers. And secondly, I go into classrooms all over the state and you have tremendous amount of technology, but no one is using it because the teachers aren't trained properly in using the technology. So how do you see those kinds of ills circumvented?
Well, I think you're speaking about, frankly, the continuing professional development issue. And I think we all widely acknowledge that most of the teachers in Pennsylvania's classrooms have been in the classroom now for 25 to 30 years. And clearly, if you graduated from college 30 years ago, it's been a long time since you were fresh with respect to the latest information. And let's also acknowledge that you are required by state law to take additional courses beyond your college degree. And now, in state law, you are required to take 180 hours of continuing professional development in 5 years to be recertified or you lose your position. So to some extent we have tried to address the issue of continuing professional development, but I think there is so much new in education and so much research being done all the time that it is a little difficult when you're in the classroom, and especially elementary teachers. I've always had such high regard for them because they are in the classroom all day, every minute practically, with those students, it's not like in the high school where you get a prep period or a break during the day. It's just very intense, I think, at the elementary level. But clearly, we need to provide educators with opportunities to refresh themselves, to learn the latest in pedagogical skills, in computer technology, in behavioral techniques in the classroom. And a lot of that's a function of local leadership. I attended an Act 180 day, Act 80, I think it's Act 80 day, in a high school one time, and I was just amazed. This is supposed to be a day where teachers get continuing professional development. And we had a selection from the band concert. We had a selection from the school play. We had a speech by the superintendent. And I spoke. Of course, that was the best part of the whole I'm kidding. But very little of the morning part of the program was devoted to improving the skills of the teachers. And hopefully with the bill that we passed recently, the Continuing Professional Development Bill, that will change, that school districts will focus more on bringing in quality instruction, requiring that teachers be up to date on inclusive practices for special ed students, on behavioral techniques, brain development, all the things that they should be up to snuff on, technology. Hopefully that will help, that requirement will help teachers be on the cutting edge of their profession. But again, it's so much a function of local leadership as to how all this comes about, opportunities provided for teachers. One of my school districts, the teachers and the superintendent wired their entire school for technology in their spare time. And that's one of my favorite superintendents, by the way, who is now retired from being a superintendent, but tremendous local leadership involving the teachers and training the teachers in their spare time. And it was more a volunteer effort than anything. And I was so impressed by that teachers would be willing to volunteer their time to wire the school to learn the technology so they could help their students in their spare time and for free. Not an very common occurrence, I think, but I just thought that was fabulous. And there's no question that we need to make sure that teachers are on the cutting edge. It's one thing to hire a good teacher. You have to continue to provide the opportunities for them to continue to be on the cutting edge of their profession.
And my guess is the media didn't pick up on that event at all and didn't publicize it, and no one knew about it because we don't hear about the positive kinds of things that teachers or schools are doing. We tend to hear all the negative, which is one of my particular foibles about the Pennsylvania media. You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here today with Representative Phyllis Munday of the Pennsylvania House. You may reach her at 717-783-1614. That's 717-783-1614. Or you may reach her by email at pmundy@pahouse.net. That's pmundy@pahouse.net. Or you can reach us here at Children Come First at toll-free 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PROKIDS. Or email us at ProKids, PROKIDS, at RLC.net. Now let's get back a little bit to parenting issues and committed parenting, because I'd kind of like to come full circle on all of that. We started off with talking about parents and the need for the ages 0 to 6 and how important that is. We have definitely given over our rights in this country in many ways to the institutions, so to speak. You know, I don't know if that had to do with some of the laws that were passed and free money and those kinds of issues. But it seems that parents have given over their parenting to the schools, to physicians, to even courts of law. How can we bring parents back? I mean, do we give them a report card like we do the children, like some states have done? How do we begin to get parents interested in being in the classroom again and working with the school? I know I also feel from a point of view of a parent that I've discovered that many teachers are threatened by parents who come into the classroom and aren't taught how to use them as facilitators in the learning process. Can you address these issues on committed parenting in the schools?
Very huge issue and a huge part of our problem in public education, I think. And the situation that comes to mind most readily when we begin to talk about parents and their involvement in the classroom is the situation where when I grew up, and I'm sure when you grew up and were in public education, if I had come home and told my parents that I had been disciplined in school, I would have been disciplined at home, no questions asked. My teachers would have been assumed to be trying to control the classroom, and I had clearly done something that disrupted the classroom and was unacceptable, or I would not have been disciplined. Today, the situation is exactly the opposite. If a child goes home and says they've been disciplined in the classroom, the parent comes into the school and wants to know what's wrong with the teacher. How dare she or he discipline my child? And I think, you know, as much as people believe that discipline in the classroom is important, they do very little to support it. And they do very little to make sure that their own child, now this obviously is not the case in every situation, but I think this is what teachers are often faced with. They're faced with a lawsuit if they now I'm not for corporal punishment in any way, shape, or form in the classroom or even at home, frankly, but that's my personal preference at home. But that's a problem, that teachers feel the threat of a lawsuit if they so much as raise their voice to a child, harassment and other types of things. Students who literally assault teachers and in trying to defend themselves are taken to court as having assaulted the student. And I can't tell you how many incidents have been brought to my attention in my local school districts of things just exactly like that. Very unfortunate, but it's truly led to a decline in discipline in the classroom, I think. And to the extent that parents are involved in the school's PTO programs and PTA, I think that's very helpful because it's sort of like us as politicians. If you don't know a politician personally, if you don't know someone who's committed and trying to do a good job in public service, it's easy to look at us as a lump, as a group, and say, oh, well, you know, there are so many bad ones that they all must be bad. I just really think that if parents got more involved with teachers in organizations where they share a common goal, that there would be more support for teachers in the classroom. And frankly, in my school districts, I do see an awful lot of that, parent involvement in the classroom. Dallas Elementary School, I was just there recently reading to the Reading is Fundamental. It was RIF Day, Reading is Fundamental, and the PTO invited me in to read to the kids, and a lot of the parents were there. And I know the parents are extremely involved in the Dallas Elementary School, and I just love that school, and Wycallis Elementary, and the parents at Dallas High School just had a lock-in for their high school students who were graduating to keep them safe and entertained on graduation night. So there is a lot of that goes on. I could only wish that there was more of it. Chester Street School in the Wyoming Valley West School District is another good example. The parents are very supportive of the classroom situation and often come in to help out in various ways. And I think that's very, very positive. Unfortunately, in today's society, so many parents work. Both parents, mother and father, work. Or the mother works because she's a single parent. And I think that puts so many stresses and strains on the family unit that it becomes very difficult to be good parents. And, you know, you talked earlier about childcare. And I agree with you that some childcare situations are absolutely abominable. They're worse than just babysitting, because in some cases the kids aren't even safe. And I believe that in addition to home visitation as an element of helping parents, I think society also has to realize that times have changed dramatically since the days when mom stayed home and took care of the kids and was there after school, where mom and dad were home for dinner in the evening and the kids and the parents sat around the dinner table and discussed the world events of the day. Those days are gone, and the stresses and strains on parents today are much different and much greater. And the influences that children come under today with drugs and alcohol and teen pregnancy and some very, very much more serious challenges that parents and kids face today. And quality, high quality child care is an absolute necessity in today's world. And it's another area where we have some of the lowest paid people in our workforce work in child care situations. If we truly were looking to prevent some of the problems that we experience when kids begin to get into trouble, we would be looking at home visitation and helping parents be better parents, and we would be looking at improving child daycare to the extent that kids were very well taken care of, ready for school when they get there, had all their health needs met. I mean, it seems so basic and so common sense, and yet it just isn't happening. And so much of our child care is very poor quality. So much of our child care is so haphazard. It's just very unfortunate that we're not more focused in those areas. And I realize that it's hard to quantify how much you would save given an investment in home visitation and in high quality child care. It's hard to quantify what problems you'd prevent in terms of dollars and cents, but there have been studies done that show that for every dollar invested in those early childhood years, you save as much as $7. I've heard studies that show as much as $12 over the life of that person, that individual. So I believe that that investment would be worth its weight in gold, both in terms of developing human potential and in preventing some of the problems that society faces with regard to victimization by these people who don't succeed in school and then find other ways to support themselves. It just seems so common sense, and yet we're not focused in that area at all. And I really wish that we could focus society in more productive ways.
Well, actually, there are countries that have statistical information. Denmark, Sweden, Italy have all found that Italy and the Reggio Emilia schools of Italy, when we've had them on the show before, Denmark and Sweden, we've had Jim, who was the former director of the National Institute of Health, who did a 50-year study, a study on 50 cultures over a 25-year period. And the medical profession in Denmark and Sweden took his research from America and incorporated it and discovered that they save six figures per child over a lifetime when they influenced the 0 to age 6. They encouraged parents to stay home with their children. They paid them to stay home with their children. They are now up to paying fathers to stay home as well as mother, and found that their rate of violence has dropped, their incarceration rate has dropped, their children are happier, and the Reggio Schools of Italy also create a daycare center where children are, they're very highly paid teachers, and children are nurtured and taken care of as if they were their own children. And these have been incorporated now, not only throughout Italy, but are being incorporated in the upper grades as well. So there are longitudinal studies that do show that everything that you are have instinctively been doing for Pennsylvania students have been absolutely proven in many other countries other than the United States. And it is sad that in our own country we don't take care. I mean, we do a lot of lip service for our children, but do we really do the nitty-gritty kinds of things? Now, we have about 2 minutes left. Would you like to sum up for our audience what we've talked about here, or add anything that we missed?
Well, to sum up, I would just like to thank you very much for this really wonderful program that you you put on the air, and for your work to try to bring to the attention of the general public the issues revolving around children and why they're so important. You know, we all talk the talk about children as our future, but I think many of us lose sight of the fact that in today's world, we will eventually have so many more older people relying on the productivity, the intelligence of so many fewer young people to support society's needs, wants, desires. We had better make sure that each and every child reaches his or her fullest potential, and that we maximize that potential so that, you know, older people can feel secure that they will have the professionals they need to support their medical needs and all their other needs, pay their Social Security and Medicare, and make sure that society functions the way we would like it to. Because the reverse of that is if we don't, we may have a very serious crisis on our hands.
Point well taken. You have been listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We have spent a wonderful hour with Representative Phyllis Munday. You can reach her at 717-783-1614. That's 717-783-1614. Or you can reach us at toll-free 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PROKIDS. Or you can email me at prokids@rlc.net. That's prokids@rlc.net. We'd like to thank you for joining us, and thank you, Representative Money, for spending this hour. I know how difficult it is to get away for an hour, especially in the middle of legislative time. Thank you again, and please join us again next week for our program, and again with interesting topics relating to our children. Have a wonderful week, and give your children a hug.